You are listening to iRadio TT, online all the time.
Welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. The podcast series featuring news, interviews and analysis of all the music from the islands.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Music Matters,
the Caribbean edition. I am Laura Dowridge Phillips.
And I'm Nigel Campbell. And once again, we're talking about the business of music here in the Caribbean.
Yes, we are. It's been a minute, Nigel.
Yes, but that's life. As I said, we do this thing. But we're back once again. And it's more than COVID. I mean, there's just life going on and as it is.
And yes, I think OSET is fully open.
But yes, and things have been happening, and I think we need to get back on the bandwagon, as it was, or the bicycle, or whatever we have to get back on, to continue discussing about the business of music. And effectively, we're talking about a post-COVID recovery of music and the music industry in the Caribbean, and of course for Caribbean players abroad, because we didn't have the advantage of the United States, where they just ignored mass mandates and they opened up fully, and to hell was everybody else. But we, of course, cautiously reopened. Another way of opening, as we can see, carnivals have restarted up throughout the Caribbean. Famously, our Trinidad Carnival. You are the one who mentioned that there was Aussie Merrick. We have a center season, which happens between Ash Wednesday and about July, where they launch the carnival for the next year. So in that period, things have to happen rapidly. So as a consequence, Trinidad had this big, big, big launch of carnival. And of course, soca artists are back in the scene and shows are happening and massive concerts are going to be happening at Barclays Center. And we'll discuss all these things in this podcast.
Yes. It's been, like you said, you know, the Caribbean is fully open. Trinidad is fully open once again. And I think after 2 years of festivals and concerts being postponed or canceled, the world is, everybody is really anxious to get back to life as they knew it, right? Mm-hmm. Funnily, we said that the COVID pandemic there's a new normal, but honestly, what I see is, I don't see a new normal. I see people rushing back to get back to what they know as normal. So in-person events are fully back on, even though COVID is still with us. It is still a threat. People are still dying. People are still getting sick.
Correct.
But we are learning to live with COVID, because human beings are social creatures and we need to be outside among each other. Right. So there's a lot has been happening. And you know, with everything opening back up, of course, Nigel, I'm back out on the road.
Tell me about it. Where's Laura today?
It's so funny. After 2 years of not going anywhere, now everybody greets me with, "You here?
Yep.
How long are you here for?
So long I see you." It is what it is. Welcome to Music Matters.
Welcome to Music Matters. I've been back out on the road. And I have to say, honestly, my first trip was supposed to be Mele.
Mexico, that's the
Mexico,
tribe
which
event.
Which was Tribe and Marshall Montano's big event, destination event in Cancun. And I was looking forward to that so much. Mm-hmm. And the day that I went to test to go, I tested positive for COVID. And I couldn't go. I was so mad. I sat on my car and cried when they called me. The clinic called me. Because I was looking forward to that so much. But, you know, Mele was by all accounts an amazing event. Mm-hmm. As you all may or may not know, Mashup Montano is celebrating his 40th year in soca. So let's start with that.
Yes.
It's a monumental year for him. It's a real milestone. I mean, you can't sneeze at 40 years in the business at all.
Yes, that's legendary status, certainly in the Calypso and the soca industry, definitely. If Soka is only 50, 55 years old and he's in it for 40 years and he's not yet 60 years old.
And he's not yet 60.
Is he 50?
No, Marshall is. He's 2 years younger than me. He'll be 40. I'll be 50 this year. Yes, I tell you, let me age. I'll be a whole 50 this year.
The year
October 27th, I take gifts. Thank you very much.
Okay. Who is this lady, boy?
I'm accepting presents. Yeah, so he is 47. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Mele was his first major, I think it was his first major event coming out of the last 2 years, because unlike most soca artists, he was not out there performing. He wasn't doing live shows, virtual shows, or anything. He was enjoying his newly married status in Togo. He was relaxing. He was doing his yoga. He was, you know, having a time. He was recording, putting out music, but he wasn't performing. So at Mele, he did three shows. I think it was, he did three shows. No, he did two shows. One was two nights of his 40-year journey. One night, first 20 years, the second 20 years. And it, by all accounts, it was epic. A lot of his fans came out. And since then, we have seen him performing on Orlando. He was in Caribana. He's back out touring. He's back on the road. And he has a massive 40-year anniversary concert coming up at the Barclays Center. Pretty soon. I mean,
there's
I
know 20,000 people, that 20,000 capacity for Labor Day in New York. I ain't gonna lie to you. If he does it, I wish him the best. I hope that he is able to fill the venue, because that's a milestone in terms of artists filling a venue. Because I can tell him, well, based on my age, years and years ago, they used to have these Father's Day concerts in New York itself, Madison Square Garden, where Sparrow would be headlining and thing. And they make about 10,000, but it was kind of a regular thing. So Madison Square Garden would rent the Caribbean community the venue, knowing full well it will not be filled, but they'll have a fair amount of Caribbean artists. But for Marshall to go to Barclays Center and to get more than 10,000-15,000 people, that is the kind of milestone. We now treading in the areas where those Puerto Rican reggaeton artists are doing, and the dancehall artists. And
well,
that is a real...
Let's not forget he played at the Madison Square Garden.
The theater at Madison Square Garden, yes. Two shows back to back. And
so I'm pretty sure this show will be mega. I know Trinidadian audiences are patiently waiting for him to perform here. We got a little taste of him at a benefit concert that both of us attended recently, for Daniel Diffenthaler, the filmmaker. We got a little taste of him. He performed a few songs, but it was just, you know, it was
a half hour teaser. But
yeah, we got a teaser, but people were so excited to see him finally perform on local soil. So yeah, it's a big year for him. I can't wait to see, you know, what he comes up with. What's the direction for him? You know, as his 40th year celebrations unfold, I'm anxious to see how he intends to celebrate beyond the concerts, what else he'll be doing, if he comes out with another album, you know.
Well, he did tell me via an interview that I had done, a kind of recorded interview, that the last album is Wedding an album will not be his last album. He said, no, you laugh at me actually. He said, nah, you crazy. That can be my last album. So, and I'm confident that he will be putting on new albums. There's a thing that I had reviewed a Calypso Rose album some years ago, one of her new comeback albums, with Leave Me Alone on it. And I'd use the phrase, the cult of nostalgia, because at the time I was kind of reviewing this, the audiences globally had kind of found favor in some of these older artists. There's this artist, well, she's passed away now, Cesarea Ovaria from Cape Verde, who has had a very huge following in Europe and things. And she's like, oh, everybody's trending and that kind of stuff. The Jolly Boys from Jamaica. And a lot of these artists are basically senior citizens. And of course, Calypso Rose, in the French market, became the queen of new music, right? Now, Marshall is nowhere close to these people's age. As you said, Marshall is not even 50 years old as yet. But he certainly is a senior player among very popular soca artists. Probably Super Blue, who's still performing, is older than him. But
yes.
I don't think anybody is anywhere in his age bracket. But he clearly is also at the top of his game.
Oh, yes.
So that there's clearly an opportunity. And if he can pull those numbers in Barclays Center, people are going to be interested, and he's a smart business person. Let's not play games about that idea. So that if people are going, the whole notion about the music industry is about young people. There's also a very large market for older persons. I don't want to call him an old man, but there are also persons who are, they veer towards these older singers, and there's a market that he can tap into easily. I see him once again doing like Calypso Rose. Go to Europe. I mean, I know everybody's focusing on North America, but I'll say it from now on. I'll say it until my body freezes in the ground. Europe. That is where we need to go for our music. That's just my thinking. But say what?
Yeah, I'm excited to see the direction he takes. And He's on our wish list to come on our podcast. So, you know, yeah, Marshall, if you are listening to this by chance,
once again,
we put out that appeal to you sometime
once again.
The doors are still open for you to come and talk to us, to explore. This is a good time in your 40th
once
year,
again,
to come Marshall, and talk to us about your business. And I mean, in the absence of that interview, we do have a book by his mother, Elizabeth Lady Montano. She has written a biography of
her
son called King of Soca. It is the first book to be written about Marshall Montano.
Amazing.
And really, imagine that. And really, it really is a testimony to an artist's greatness when there are books written about them, because we need to, it's a way of getting, sealing their story.
I was,
you know, making sure their story lives on.
In terms of our local market, I just weekend gone there, I covered the Lord Nelson. He's 91 years old, from Tobago.
Still performing.
Still performing, still dropping. Well, the hits are the hits, so we know them. Yes. We like it, so always one family. And his performance, I mean, he walks with a cane, but geez and ages, the man still could deliver. But at the beginning of that concert, John Arnold, who's head of Tobago Festivals and head of this group called Friends of Lord Nelson, made an appeal to the sponsors. He said, I wish sponsors could come forward to pay for the creation and publication of a biography. And when he said that, my ears pricked up, and I said, you know, he's correct, because as much as we're lauding the idea of Marshall having a biography written on him, it's a pretty nice book. It's the size of a coffee table book. Nice physical document, as it was. Well
very
done.
Well done.
There aren't, like, there's just basically a handful of biographies of, there's no biography of Sparrow. There's a fictional biography of Kitchener by Anthony Joseph that involves a lot of made up conversations, but it takes the facts. I think there's something on Black Stalin, probably something on Valentino, but we just don't have enough biographies. So in Trinidad, our Trinidad artists.
Well, I would say this, Nigel. While the money is necessary to get the books published, most important thing is capturing the stories. If Nelson is 91 years old, then somebody needs to get that story.
Right now.
They can't wait for corporate TNT to step up. Just get the story.
Yeah,
even if he passes, at least you have
the story. You're quite correct.
You understand? And that is the most important thing, for us to capture the stories. Think about the money after. But capture these stories while they're still here, because the way the world is going, they could be here today and tomorrow you wake up and seeing and rest in peace all over Facebook, you know?
Quite true. But Laura, let me ask you a question of something Laura didn't mention. I'm going to mention it. Laura also wrote the foreword to that King of Soca book, right? She's humble and thing. But beyond that, Laura, as we all discussed, number one entertainment journalist in the Caribbean, but she's a writer. Right?
Yes.
And I, without letting the cat out of the bag, I know that she's working on a biography of a local artist, musician, superstar,
yes,
we call it that. But she'll discuss that, or the artist will discuss it when it's closer to publication.
Yes.
But I think what this kind of also shows is the kind of, and it's not a complaint per se, we don't have enough writers. Trinidad and Tobago recently has been producing these novelists who've been winning awards all throughout the world and Europe and North America. But we don't have enough entertainment writers. I don't know if entertainment journalism is a dying job. I don't know. I really don't know. But just the idea of writing biographies, how difficult is it? Because you are writing a biography. How difficult is it to write a biography?
To me, it's not difficult because I write for a living, right? It's not difficult to me. Maybe the interest just isn't there. Maybe when it comes to entertainment journalism, the interest just isn't there. Maybe people just see it as something, you know, not a very serious endeavor, because it maybe they're just relegated to, you know, having a good time, going to a couple of parties, doing a profile of somebody and calling that judge. But it's such a rich field, and it's so much more than that. And there's so much room for analysis and even data, which is something you're very good at, capturing data and telling a story through data. Mm-hmm. There are so many stories that we're not telling. You know, a lot of our entertainment have, you know, come out of social situations. It can explain a lot of things socially that's going on with us. You could see the evolution of the culture if we just pay attention. There are just so many stories that I don't know. I know that a lot of media managers maybe don't take it seriously. Maybe they think it's a frivolous thing, you know. But
I know persons at universities, a couple of academics have actually written, famously Gordon Rollet has written not so much a story. He's written a bunch of essays and compiled them into a book on Sparrow. He's been writing on Calypso for many, many years. Jocelyn Gibault from Montreal, she wrote a book on Roy Cape, the band leader, Roy Cape, right? It's one of the few biographies written on a musician outside of singers, right? So, as I said, the problem I'm having is this notion of what legacy is, right? We spoke about Nelson being 91, but Marshall even at 47, 48, right? Thank God his book has been written by the ultimate insider. I think that is the catchphrase they're using.
The ultimate insider,
right? But the idea of all these other artists is no book on Super Blue. And Super Blue is Marshall's mentor.
And Super Blue has an amazing story.
Exactly.
You know, I was able to capture a piece of his story when, you know, when he had done, he had gone back to Charlie's Records to record a song a few years ago. And it was like coming full circle because it was Charlie who he had basically given him a start with Soca Baptist and stuff. But he has an amazing story. And even beyond the Calypso legends, Nigel, there is a whole contemporary story that nobody touching. That the artists of my era, you know,
which is only, like 10, only 10 years before my era, but
right.
There's one of them to the old age home, but go ahead.
But the artists I grew up with, the Bungees and the MX Prime and that whole era when all the DJs who the DJs who we consider mainstream now started coming out, people like Hoppy and Shal and all of them, all those people who were DJs, all the DJ outfits from back in that time. There's a whole story to be told that we haven't fully captured. You know, the thing keeps evolving, and now we had the whole reggae movement. We have that. If this was the United States, that would be fully documented, a full documentary on that.
Yeah,
now we have the Trinidad movement, and that is a story by itself.
Well,
you know,
I have the idea of, as you rightly say, there are stories about individuals, which are the biographies, but there are stories about movements, as you rightly said, Trinidad, dancehall, caravan, all those kind of things.
There's
because
so many stories to be told.
What is also happening is that even beyond the kind of international recognition of the music, the local people and generations are actually going to forget who these people are.
Yes.
And then somebody, some interloper is going to come from abroad and grab up whatever he can. And of course, reproduce it with mistakes per se, and then put it out. Then we're gonna say, "Oh, but look, we're in a North American magazine or in a publication of Europe or something." So,
which is what happened with Hip Hop Evolution, the series on Netflix. Excellent, excellent documentary on hip hop. And there was an episode with Diddy, and he was talking when he came to Trinidad to record, and people were in shock, like, "What? Diddy was in Trinidad record?" The time Diddy spent in Trinidad recording at Kiskali. At Caribbean
Song Base,
laid the foundation for who he became after Biggie died. And people didn't know that. A lot of the younger generation didn't know that story until they saw Hip Hop Evolution. But we lived through that. We knew when he was here.
I remember.
We lived through that story. So there are so many stories to be told. There's so many stories. And you know, and we don't just need the academics to tell it because they will tell it from a certain perspective, but we just need stories. We need documentaries made. We need books to be written.
Yes, because, and podcast interviews, among other things.
Yes, because all of this, as you say, will be lost. Generations from now, people might forget who Super Blue is, you know?
Quite true.
God, could you imagine?
Yeah, it's frightening when you think about it because I lived in the States in late 90s, early 2000s. And one of the most amazing things was going to the Library of Congress in Washington. It's a complex. It's not even a building. It's a complex of buildings. But they had these Folkways records and Cook records. They were in Trinidad recording early music from the 1950s, Calypso and that kind of stuff. And then there were a couple of record labels. There was a label called Rounder Records that was putting out early Calypsos that were recorded in the 30s and coming up. And then you realize a lot of this music had never been played in Trinidad, because by the time radio became a thing in the 60s, that music was not going to be played, right? And people didn't know the history of the music. And of course, there is nobody to contextualize it and say, well, this is what happened. Of course, labels have come later and compiled them in series, Decca Records, Caesar, that kind of thing. And people complain, right? So as much as we are here, you and I have this podcast talking about the business of music, you and I also have the ability, and I'm not putting you on the spot here, to do, like, you're the number one interviewer of artists, and I'm going to challenge you. I'm challenging you, right? That if we talk about the business of music, but you can just talk to these artists, let them tell their stories, because I think the technology now, people may or may not be reading, but certainly everybody's watching a video.
Everybody watching a video.
So that there's an opportunity, and there is something just to get the artists to understand that legacy is important. But beyond that, what else have you been doing? Because as you said, you're back out post-COVID.
Yes. So two events I went to that I really want to talk about. After Millie did not happen. My first trip ended up being to LA. Mm-hmm. My very first trip to LA. Mm-hmm. And I went to an event called Island Line. Mm-hmm. And this is an event for those of you who may know Simon Batiste. We had him on our podcast.
Yeah,
Simon Batiste is the CEO and founder of Question Mark Entertainment, together with Carolyn Page. And they were, they managed quite a few artists, most notably Esteban, for quite a few years. Mm-hmm. So they have a platform called Odus, which Nigel and I are a part of. One degree of separation. And the whole purpose of that platform is to provide opportunities for creatives in the Caribbean and in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. Opportunities in film and music, opportunities for funding, opportunities for networking, opportunities for development, mm-hmm. career development. And the Island Lime is an event that they hold in LA, which is basically a networking event. It's a mixer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity for people who are part of the Odus platform to meet industry stakeholders from music and film, mm-hmm. talent agents, casting directors, publicists, producers, DJs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I went to Island Line. It was held in LA. I can't remember the name of the club right now, but it was an interesting
bang experience. Bang something.
Yes. So, yes.
Whatever.
But it was a very interesting experience indeed, mm-hmm. to see Simon's vision,
mm-hmm.
actually executed. It was really interesting. They held the first one just before the pandemic, and they had people like Winston Duke and other actors, mm-hmm. and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this time around they had it. There were quite a few people who flew in from all over the world to attend. And it was a weekend of events. So it was the main Island Line event. And then they had different, mm-hmm. opportunities for people to connect with industry stakeholders. They had one-on-one meetings, just, mm-hmm. industry stakeholders giving advice. There was, choreographers, like I said, casting agents, publicists, mm-hmm. people who work in the film industry. And it was really an education. It was an eye-opener because, you hear about LA. Mm-hmm. But actually being there and understanding what it is to break into the industry, it is really a hustle. It's a hustle. And I met people that I've interviewed and written about, mm-hmm. who are out there making it. But, it's a hustle. It's a, mm-hmm. hustle. You have to go on audition and you're constantly seeking opportunities. And it's fascinating,
LA is an entertainment town. I've heard that. I've visited it, but like a tourist kind of thing. But you're quite correct. But as everybody says, it's a pure entertainment town. And a lot of the people who are there, young people, of course, are trying to break into film and that kind of stuff, or even with the music. But as you rightly say, it's difficult to even get your toe into the door. So that's why every waiter is a screenwriter or an actor to be, right? Yeah. In all your restaurants.
Every Uber driver, every DoorDash, every person.
Everything, go ahead.
Every Lyft driver.
There you go.
Everybody's trying to break into the industry. But two things that stood out to me. One, it's a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, three things. One, it's a hustle. Two, it's who you know and who know you. And
three, connections.
You have to be flexible. You have to be flexible, because I saw in that moment where, DJs and singers connected with producers, and it was like, oh, you do this? Okay, I'm heading to the studio. Let's go. And they're like, okay, we're off to the studio. You have to be flexible. Mm. You have to be willing to just do
it on now a for dime, now.
Just turn and do, mm-hmm. whatever you need to do to make your dreams happen,
That attitude and that way of how the business is done, of course, that's part of the American scene for many, many years. Just out of your experience, how much of that has come down here where we have that. Is that attitude still prevalent here, or are we just lazy and say, I'll have to make an appointment, I can't do it tomorrow to wash clothes or some kind of thing? So, I mean, how does
it
work?
I don't know, because I guess being in that concentrated environment, I saw it. But I don't know how it works. I don't know if it works like that here. If it's a case of I introduce you to a producer and they say, yeah, let me go to the studio now. I don't know.
Do we have that kind of attitude, that kind of flexible attitude based on the people that you've spoken to?
I guess we would have to, because a lot of our artists and producers do operate outside of Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they would have to have that attitude, because, I mean, so like I said, it's a lot of networking and there were DJs and songwriters from Trinidad, from other islands there, and they were able to, in a moment, just, okay, I'm off to the studio with this person that I just met. So I guess they do have the attitude. I guess it's the environment that they're in.
All right. That's important to know, because as much as we've been loading up the LAUD, loading up the regional and industry, it becomes at like almost tenfold when you step into the United States. So like if you step into LA, right, Miami, New York, and the kind of major cities, Atlanta, and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But it's clear to me, at least, that the kind of level of work that has to be put into into a career is huge, huge, huge. And the results, of, as we all know, is never 90%. It's probably 10%. So only put a lot of work in, the results, you have to wait for them. And the who you know and who knows you fact, I think it becomes very, very important, as it was.
Yeah. It's very clear, you know, we're not operating in silos anymore. It's a global industry. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to go wherever the opportunities are, right?
So if you're in music, it could also be in film or that kind of that kind of thing. Yeah.
But then you can't just be local. You have to be.
You have to. Yeah.
You know?
Gotcha.
It's very important.
I like what Simon is doing. Just to talk back to Simon, as an entrepreneur from the Caribbean who's going out there, he's going where the people are, the people that we need to see. He's going where they are and say, okay, this is it, as opposed to like a medium or some kind of thing. So we have to go and hope that we could get one or South by Southwest kind of stuff. More power to Simon. I like that. Do you know if any other Caribbean entrepreneurs is doing that kind of networking thing? Have you?
Not. I know people who want to. Like, I've spoken to a couple of people who operated in that industry in Hollywood, and they want to do the same thing. But I don't know. I can't say often that I know
what's happening.
But, I mean, Simon has amazing contacts there. So he's really using his network to help Caribbean creatives. And I really admire that, you know, because it's something he's always done through Decibel, that he started since like early 2000s. He started Decibel, and it evolved into this major youth event. But it's something he's always done. He's always championed Caribbean creators and always tried to find a space for them to succeed, you know, and to make money.
Exactly. You know? So it's still a business.
It's still a business. And I remember I met a filmmaker from St. Vincent. I can't remember his name right now. I don't know what's going on with me and people's names. But he did a film, and I was asking about the funding part of it. And he said, you know, Caribbean creators have to find so many innovative ways to get their projects off the ground. And what he did is basically ask people to work on this film and then pay them from the money that he made.
So effectively, they're going to be all mini shareholders and the firm, effectively.
Basically,
that's a business model I've kind of heard of, but I've never known that it was used. But more power to him. I hope he's successful.
Yeah, the film, listen, I have to remember the name of the film too. The film did pretty well. It won a couple of awards, and I think it's streaming on Amazon or something, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. So Film and music now seems to be merging in a big way, and the Caribbean has to be part of it, so we have no choice but to get there.
Yeah. So the other thing I went to was the St. Kitts Music Festival.
Boom.
That has been something that has been on my bucket list for a long time, and I was actually supposed to go in 2020, but then the pandemic lockdown scheme is usually held in June, so the event was postponed for 2 years, and it came back this year. And so I went to St. Kitts Music Festival. Let me tell you, I had a time.
Dora Rich, regional music traveler.
Listen,
you told me about World Creole Music Festival before the pandemic, which is a huge, huge, huge endeavor.
Well, St. Kitts Music Festival is just as big. It is the main economic driver for the tourism industry in St. Kitts.
Wow, just like St. Lucia Jazz is for St. Lucia?
Yes. Wow. I mean, obviously, this being the first year that it returned, they didn't do a whole lot of marketing internationally, but they did bring in some international media and to cover. So next year, they will go full 100 with their marketing. But listen, Kittishan people.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't gonna lie to tell you, I've been to St. Lucia Jazz, been to World Creole Music Festival. Kittishan people, they have to be the most supportive crowd I have seen in any music event. I don't know if it is they just knew the music of every artist, or if the music was being played on radio in the lead up to the music festival, if out of curiosity they just went and find the music. But these people sang every single song for every single artist. Even artists, like one, a good example, Jada Kingdom. I know about Jada Kingdom. Honestly, I can't tell you offhand what song she sang. This crowd knew every single song Jada sang. Even Jada was surprised because they sang a song that has at the time had not yet been released. But
somebody leaked it.
No, she gave a tease of the song on YouTube. Just a tease, a few lines. Mm-hmm. And that crowd sang that few lines like if they know the song. Jada went on Instagram. She said she was in shock. She was like, you all know the song already. They knew the song. From the little teaser she gave, they knew the song. They sang every single song from, and I'm talking soca artists, Afrobeat artists, dancehall artists. They knew the songs. And what I really loved about St. Kitts, and we saw it at St. Lucia where they had a side stage with their local talent. What St. Lucia did, and they made a big deal about it in all their press conferences.
St. Kitts or St. Lucia?
St. Kitts. What they did, they made sure their artists were front and center.
Important.
So every single night they had their artists performing. And they really pushed their artists in all the press conferences. They really gave their artists equal treatment to the as they would with the foreign artists.
That's important.
And the crowd support for the local artists were just as big as it would for the foreign artists.
For the foreign artists. That's excellent. Yeah.
And they have a good crop of local artists. Dancehall is very big in St. Kitts.
Yeah, dancehall is big everywhere.
It's big everywhere. The Caribbean has, you know, throughout the Caribbean, dancehall has been bubbling, and not just Jamaican dancehall, homegrown dancehall from different islands. So St. Kitts has its fair share of their local dancehall artists, one of whom was actually signed by Prince Swanee, who is like the leader of the Trinidad movement.
Yeah, Trinidad dancehall, this is huge. And he was signed himself, like that news was breaking.
Independent label affiliated to Rock Nation.
That Prince Swanee is being signed for a distribution deal. So dancehall is taking off all over the world.
Yeah, taking off all over the Caribbean.
What I'm also seeing is that festivals are back in a way. Of course, Carnival is our big thing here in Trinidad. Yeah. And St. Lucia has the Jazz Festival. St. Kitts has the Music Festival. Dominica has the World Creole Music Festival. Yeah. So every island now has a kind of identifying way that music can get to the big public as well as to bring foreigners in and that kind of stuff. The festivals are back once again, but there's something that's happening in Trinidad, which may or may not affect everybody, but the Steel Pan Month. And Lauren, are you having a conversation about the kind of exposure of Pan in Trinidad? Has always been a kind of ensemble thing, but there's this kind of new movement among a bunch of young panists to kind of put themselves front and center. Let's explore that a little further, if you don't mind.
Yes, I have been observing this. So we know Dean Gulston,
Mr. famously, Excitement.
You know, he really made a name for himself with his antics and stuff as a soloist, a pan soloist on his tenor pan. You know, very exciting. And then in recent years, we've had Johan Chokri, again, became the same thing. I know we see him and Dean. They usually share a stage and do that kind of pan shootout.
There you go. A million notes a second. As you talk about that, Johan had a show that I covered recently. And Johan had Dane as a guest, obviously, but you also had Joshua Regrello. You know Joshua is from South, South people like
Joshua. Yes, Joshua's father is the founder of Skiffle Bunch.
Skiffle Bunch, yeah.
Skiffle Bunch. So he grew up in a Pan. Grew up in family. Pan,
yeah.
He grew up in Pan, yeah. And he has really, you know, I think he's taken it a step further, and really making. Being a panelist is a very exciting thing. I mean, pan soloists are not new. Mm-hmm. Right? We've had people like Liam Teague. We've had, we've had so many
foreigners
people
like Andy Narell, everybody. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But for a young market, Joshua Girl is a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is carving his space among his peers as this exciting soloist. He even put out his own album. He had a concert the other day. So I think it's very exciting to see how the young ones are packaging themselves as panis.
You're quite right. As I say, well, I do know my other thing is jazz, and a lot of pan has always been associated, not a lot, but some of the pan has been associated with the jazz, instrumental jazz as it was. So you have, as I said, some of these older names, Ray Holman, of course, a pioneer, Len Bugsy Sharp, Robbie Greenidge, and of course, Andy Narell in America, or Teller Molly, I could call the names, Liam Teague, call them. But Dane Gulson to me represents something, as I said, Mr. Showman. He's kind of, he's kind of the equivalent of Arturo Tappin in the kind of popular jazz saxophone thing. And I know they also work together, Arturo and Dane. But Johan and his family, they're like a musical family, but Johan and Dane together do this, as you said, pan shootout with, who can play the pan faster, that kind of stuff. Joshua, and I covered that event, right? And I had to say this about Joshua. Joshua is clearly younger than I am. But Joshua is an entertainer. The way he came on stage, the way he impacted with the audience, and the way he delivered, and even the way that he interacted with Johan, because it was supposed to have a little shootout, and Johan did a million and one fireworks, and Joshua just watched him and said, what are you going to do after that, right? The audience laughed, and he literally didn't, he didn't respond. And but his banter and his comfort on stage told me that this young guy is going to be a star in the entertainment, and if pan is his main instrument, more power to him.
I love that. I love that.
He's a very, 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 very comfortable on the stage. And it helps. And he had all this other smile on his face. I said, this fella's going to go far. So the idea of our instrumentalists, well, panis, I should say, more than anything else, making a career of it and hopefully carving a new niche that can get an audience, certainly locally, regionally, and of course, internationally, be something to look forward to in the years to come. Because, as I said, pan has been associated instrumentally, of course, we know pan size and psalms and that kind of stuff. They've had steel band records since 1914. Kim Johnson could correct me on that. But I think critically, what has happened is it has always been a very, very niche market. And I always remember Andy Narell told me that he said, it's very niche, but you don't make no money, right? So the thing is, you really want to make some kind of career out of it. And what I've been seeing with Johan and as you said, with Joshua. Yeah, in terms of their concerts they have recently, is that they've also been able to put together a kind of almost like a it's not a business for them, right? Because I don't know if they have day jobs. I really don't know. But what I've seen in terms of the audience sizes for the events and their following, and they could be, they were on the same show that you and I went and see with Daniel Diffenthaler show, and they had massive crowd response. So there's potential for them to go beyond the border, beyond the boundary.
Think going back to Marshall, when Marshall started out, he, you know, he always says that he wanted to make soca cool for his peers. Because at that time, people his age, they weren't singing soca.
He was too young to soca. I had to say it.
They were more into pop and rap and whatever was the contemporary music of the day. And we always lament that young people don't seem to be interested in pan. Those who will just go, you know, prefer to go back on a road over panorama. Those who would just go panorama for the line. That they're not really interested in pan. And we've seen some attempts in just before the pandemic where people had events and they incorporated pan into it. And we have to make, unfortunately, we have to make these things sexy and cool. For it to attract a younger market. Because we need a younger market for longevity.
To carry it forward.
To carry it forward and to help it evolve into something else. And so I really, you know, Lord Joshua and Dane and Johan for doing that.
Quite so.
You know?
Quite so.
I think that's very commendable.
Quite so. So,
and hopefully we'll have them, you know, on our podcast one day to talk about that. Because we don't know, as you said, do they have their jobs? Is this their career? How are they surviving on the business of pan?
Well, as I think we had kind of hinted at the idea of having a conversation about the business of pan. You just said it, yes. But in terms of a kind of contemporary situation, because I know there are panists in other islands, and certainly there are panists up in North America and that kind of stuff. But is it a money-making thing? Can it compete with other genres outside of soca and dancehall? Is it something that is worthy? Can they get a new audience? Is it the same kind of audience that that legendary calypso audience can have? So on and so on and so on. But we'll get there as we get there. But
and it's kind of transcend the tourism stereotype.
Ah. Yellow bird. And puffy sleeves.
Have a man in a pretty shirt.
And a big hat. Yeah. But as we move forward and evolving, there was something and associated with that panel, is the whole notion of carnival. You had said earlier in the conversation that you had gone to Mele, and the idea of Mele, I know it started first as a boat, a cruise ship kind of event, right? Yeah. Similar to like Jam Rock or all these kind of reggae cruises and Uber Soca, which was the kind of thing. Because of COVID and other things, it became land-based in Mexico.
Yes.
But there's a recent announcement that I saw, that I think it's called the Epic Experience. You'll have to correct me on this one.
Epic Carnival Experience.
Right. Where a promoter, I think his name is Mark, again, you'll have
Jonathan
to,
Mark.
Jonathan, yes. Mark, based in Hawaii. And some other partners, of course, Hoppy, Scorch Entertainment, Caesar's Army, Private Ryan, and Walchy Fire, coming with something that I think is pretty unique, because based on what Mark was suggesting, it's kind of difficult to get to Trinidad or to get, once you get it, to get everything organized. So he's planning a boat cruise from Barbados to Trinidad, and yes, the boat will be a kind of floating hotel for those who can't get an extra hotel in Port of Spain. I mean, we literally only have 4,000 hotel rooms in Trinidad.
But
20,000-30,000 people come for carnival every year. So the famous question is, where they staying?
Where they staying?
Right.
And because we have not had carnival for 2 years, everybody and their mother
and if I
want to come.
Exactly.
Want to come. I don't know where they're going to stay.
Yeah. But I think it was interesting looking at, in terms of how you talk about evolving carnival as it was evolving carnival music. This idea of how we've almost evolved carnival entertainment, because if Mele was a boat cruise at the time, and I personally think Mele is a great idea as a destination, because you take our biggest soca artists, you have a kind of carnival element with Tribe, carnival costume element, I should say, and you certainly have a bunch of people who are willing to be part of it. You can now put carnival, the idea of a kind of different kind of carnival, as old people go see the Mardi Gras aspect of it, and put it on a boat and sail it around the Caribbean, come off on a land to do everything. And Trinidad Carnival could, quote-unquote, be global on a boat, right?
And basically, that is what Uber Soca was doing.
Mm-hmm. There was one in called Soca on the Seas, which I think is out in
Soca on the Seas, yes.
Out in
yes.
East Asia or something like Singapore. That was kind of...
They go to different locations all over the world.
Exactly. Yeah. So that this new one, the Epic Carnival Experience, where they're basically between Barbados and Trinidad, I'm sure that people will book their flights from wherever, land in Barbados, and then take the boat down to Trinidad. But I'm also sure that Trinidadians will jump on a plane, go to Barbados to take a boat back to Trinidad. Because we like carnival. As we all know, for the last couple of weeks now, there have been launches for different bands. Of course, the famous one is Tribe Carnival, Weekend of Carnival. And it's everybody and their mother and their father and their dog was in that event. These things were huge, massive events in our rainy season. We fail to remember. These things normally happen earlier, but Trinidad has only dry season and rainy season. It is rainy season. There was a potential tropical storm or hurricane that was going to hit Trinidad a week or two before this event. People didn't care.
God is a
Trini. God is a Trini, and basically avoided Trinidad. But I think the big issue is that We're talking about younger audiences, and you and I are, you're 50 and I'm older than 50.
No, I'm 49. I'm not 50 yet.
The year of 50 and the year of 62.
Months. A couple more months, Nigel. Don't rush it.
Okay. Well, let me just say the year of 50 and the year of 62. Yes, you're into CBE. Right? But there is a whole generation of persons who could be our children without us.
Yes. Yeah.
So, who are going to be the future of the music business, the future of carnival, the future of dancehall, the future of reggaeton, for all I know, right? And they are evolving the idea of what entertainment is. Right? I ain't gonna lie to you. If somebody tell me, hey, you want to go on a boat for carnival? you go laugh them out in the place. You can be crazy. I have to be in the savannah. I have to be someplace. I had a music. We're going on a boat, and the boat is a luxurious boat, and it's all you can drink, all you can eat kind of atmosphere that they have on most cruises and that kind of stuff. But we're moving, and the only thing we can see is our friends or the ocean outside of us, right?
But with this kind of an experience, you're going to dock in Trinidad for Carnival weekend.
Yeah.
So you can come off the boat, you go to events,
yeah.
Come back, they will have events on the ship.
On the ship, okay.
So you're getting a full round kind of an experience. Yeah, accommodation is used, solved, because you're on the boat.
As I said, I think the idea, though, that this is just one boat. And as I said, Ubusoka does a similar thing, mainly next 2023, 2024.
Maybe a hybrid.
A destination and on a ship kind of thing. But that could become the new normal 3-4 years down the road. Royal Caribbean could decide, listen, we put aside 20 boats because everybody in the world needs to have a Caribbean Carnival experience and not this fantasy thing that is created in North America. No disrespect to the Caribbean Carnivals in North America. But by a North American who has never lived and experienced Carnival, he just says, I saw something on TV. If Trinidadians or Caribbean people, you are the one who knows about the Jamaican Carnival, and everybody seems to talk glowingly of Jamaican Carnival. I believe this weekend, the first weekend in August, is Barbados Carnival.
Barbados Carnival ended yesterday.
There you go. This Cropover. Caribana was
Barbados. Cadumont was yesterday. Antigua Carnival finished yesterday.
There you go.
Nevis Culturama finished today. It was Carnival. It's been a month of carnivals, basically.
There you go. Everybody's...
Spice Mass is ramping up. And then we go into Labor Day, Notting Hill.
There you go.
And Miami.
It ends in Miami.
Tobago Carnival.
Yes.
Tobago. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not heard, the Sister Isle of Tobago will be holding its very first carnival in October.
There you go.
So they are a new carnival event on the circuit.
And they want to have a carnival that is
as big as Trinidad. Yes.
Right? I mean, the history of carnival. Yeah, Trinidad was the kind of focus of it, but Tobago said, for what? Why we can't be part of this, right?
Exactly.
And they're also a tourism island, and there's this link between our festivals and tourism, which is yes, I understand that, right? But the carnival in Tobago is going to be a new element, and we'll see what happens in terms of that. But I'm just thinking that how we've evolved the idea of carnival from being a lime or a kind of thing that had certain kind of social ideas about resistance and all that kind of stuff, to now just being purely enjoyment, entertainment, alcohol,
that is what it is.
Food,
that is what it
beautiful
is,
women, you know? That kind of stuff. And then now taking the idea and taking it on a boat away. I mean, they're going to have their naysayers and critics who are going to suggest the idea of isolation and restriction, and so be it. It's a business we're talking about. We talk about the business.
Ultimately, it is a business.
And if there is a market for it, right? There is a market for it, right? Because if I understand it, Mele was sold out.
Yes.
There you go. Right?
It was.
So that can the evolution of Carnival, and of course, tied into that is how does the music respond to the thing? I had this theory many years ago about Marshall's movement. Because many, many years, he was been singing for Poison, which is a kind of predecessor to Barbarossa and all these things, and Tribe ultimately. But there was a kind of, Super Bluff, as we all know, is the king of road marches. But certainly Marshall singing in that thing had to appeal to an audience. And the audience in Tribe and in Poison looked kind of different from the audiences in those other bands. And he modified his music, made it more contemporary, fused it with a lot of popular music, pop rhythms and that kind of stuff. Of course, by the time he hit Big Truck and Toro Toro, Marshall was a superstar, and he's never looked back ever since. And I'm just wondering now, because another thing that happens in these boat cruises is the majority of the audience is not necessarily from Trinidad. We have other islanders, Northern Caribbean islanders, and of course Caribbeans who live in North America who come and partake in these things. And I've often wondered, just more guessing than a statement, do our soca artists modify? Do we go further into this fusion? Would we add more hip-hop? Would we add more, I don't know, Afrobeats?
That's a good question. And, you know, you mentioned something about the younger audiences. One of the things that we've noticed coming out of the 2 years of lockdown in Trinidad is that there's been a whole new generation of partiers now, Gen Zs, right?
Gen Zs.
All the the 16 to 25 year olds who couldn't party over the last 2 years, who came of age during the pandemic lockdowns, who probably now finish university, they're now free, they now finish form five, they now finish form six, they're outside. And this is the demographic that was largely listening to a lot of Trinidad. This is the demographic that made Trinidad big.
Yes, huge, bigger than a lot of soca.
Right. So it's, I'm very curious to see what impact they will have on the music.
Well, I know that music business persons, they always target that demographic, those young people. And it kind of, you know, why do you want to go and sell soft drinks, or selling soft drinks to 16-year-olds are one thing, but why do you sell sneakers to 16-year-olds or telephones? Because they're not even buying it. It's not their money. It's their parents' money, right?
Yes.
But marketing people will insist, no, that's the demographic, because you have to start them at that point to indoctrinate them. So that by the time they turn 20,
keep them as loyal customers
until they reach 40. Yes. Which time you go to a brand new set of people, right? So you're correct in terms of what would they say?
What would they want to hear? Who will emerge as the big artist for them?
Yes.
That is the thing I am very curious about.
Yeah,
so one of the things I observed, I remember I spoke to Voice in St. Kitts.
There you go. That's the namesake I was going to go with.
And I said to him, I said, the audio wasn't working, so we couldn't run the interview. But I remember speaking to him and I said, have you seen a shift with your popularity based on the kind of stuff content you were doing on social media during the lockdown? Because as we all know, he did his weekly Vibes Advice with Travis and his group of friends, right? Penny and his group of friends. And it was really popular. Their lives would get thousands and thousands of people.
It was Instagram live, I guess.
Yeah. And he said, yes, it has definitely had an impact on his popularity, because now people know him. Because before, you just knew Voice, who sang all these wonderfully uplifting songs, and but they got to see his personality. They got to see who he really is.
He's really a digital age artist.
Yes, he's a digital age artist. And so now people know his songs even better now. People know him better. So Voice has been going on tour all over the world, countries that he has not performed in. And so I'm watching that, and I know there are whispers that he's the next big thing in soca. He's the next big star. So I'm very curious to see how this new generation of partiers, how they respond to him, because this is the Gen Z. They are the social media generation. You understand?
Quite true.
And how the music is going to, if artists are going to adapt the music to suit this group of people who may not necessarily have been into soca before. For a lot of them, it'll be the first time seeing any of these artists live. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
As long as we have this podcast and we're talking to each other, there is something to look forward to, because you called Voice's name, and he was actually the tip of my tongue. Another artist I'm also thinking about is Nyla Blackmon, because she's also young, right?
Yes.
And she has youth on her side, which is a lot of these, as you said, Marshall is approaching 50. But there's a kind of idea that, at least from my perspective, that they need a lot more artists. Right? Something that happened, certainly, when Irfan and Shal and all these middle Irfan albums, there was a time when persons, I'm assuming like in the early 30s, a lot of them came out. And a lot of them had songs, and a lot of them had hits.
Early 20s, Irfan, Voice.
Yeah, they all started.
Second Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, we wonder who's after them.
Who's after them?
Because I'm not really seeing that wave.
Because as much as everybody likes Marshall, Kess, Bungie, Fayan, Destra, like the top five, and then, of course, another level who may be even bigger, Patrice Roberts, Nadia Batson, among others, there is... I just hope that we're churning out artists, because I often wonder, in terms of these other genres in the Caribbean, are there many dancehall artists coming after the ones that we all love? I mean, who are the hot new dancehall artists?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right. So that is the thing. So we'll see what happens, because of course, leading out of that idea of having a new generation of dancehall artists is the idea of, what is the future of Carnival? And Carnival in 2023 is in the early part of February. And we haven't heard any new music yet, but we haven't even heard any music from last year, because we didn't have, we had a taste of Carnival in 2022.
We had a taste, yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't have...
And Voice dominated that taste with Out and Bad.
Out and Bad. Dominated. But we didn't have a lot of music in the marketplace. And no. Certainly in 2021, similar, we didn't have a lot of music. So there's a lot of catching up to do. And hopefully, knowing that... We know the dates, of course, for Carnival. We're already out of the pandemic, unless... Well, I ain't going to call it into existence. So we already are out of the pandemic, and 2023 is to come. And we're looking at what is going to happen, because Carnival, which we already identified, you said Spice March in Grenada is loading up. All the other regional carnivals in North America, Labor Day, London, Notting Hill, and ended in Miami in October. I kind of call that as the final Caribbean-style, Trinidad-style Carnival Miami. And then we roll out in a big way for Carnival in 2023.
Well, I think we're going to start hearing new releases from as early as next month.
You have inside information. You seem to know.
Yeah, I think we're going to, because it's not a very long season. Mm-hmm. One, two.
It's early February, if I remember.
It's early February. So mm-hmm. I think, and normally when the Carnival season is short, we get new music dropping from very early in September.
Okay.
So for new artists who are coming out, they mm-hmm. have to drop their music early.
Early o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Right? Usually we, let's see if the pattern stays the same, where people put out the slower songs,
the groovy and then first,
later
and then
they
power on later.
They start to drop the power. Mm-hmm. The rhythms usually drop very early as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know there are quite a few albums that are supposed to be dropping.
Albums, full-fledged albums.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
There's the fun. Because I've known Nadia Batson had an album, and it had a couple original songs, new songs on it. So,
yeah,
more power to her. But albums in soca is very rare. But
well, I know albums supposed to be dropping. The thing about it is, remember, our artists have been out on the road
mm-hmm.
Ever since things opened up in the US, and as
in
more
Miami,
countries
yes.
opened up mm-hmm. and more events came. I mean, people making up for the last 2 years when they couldn't perform and make money, right?
That is.
I think as the events dry up, we're going to see them coming back home. And once they're back home, we're going to see people going to be hitting the studio if they haven't started already. And we're going to see the new music coming. So I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to have a lot of new music coming out. Mm. So we'll see.
You think the numbers will be big in terms of how much songs will be being put out?
I don't know. Mm. I mean, we still, DJs have 2 years of music to play, because music was coming out over the last 2 years.
Yeah, for the last 2 years.
We still have music
yeah.
to play. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Yeah.
Be nice to have a conversation with some of these music producers, just to get a feel of what their vibe is, a sense of what is happening, if they're going to be just producing, or they're going to be hesitant to see. Everybody's a kind of chicken and egg. Who comes first? Do I watch the market, or do I just go for it, kind of go brave? But say what? That's how it is.
Interesting. And before we wrap up, as we're talking about soca, I just want to congratulate Patrice Roberts and Ricardo Drew on their engagement.
Yes, live on stage.
Live on stage. Ricardo popped the question at Drew's Day in Antigua. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy for them. They've been, you know, together for a while. They have a daughter. They're a very cute couple. So I'm very, very happy. Patrice, say hell yeah.
Definitely.
Said, when you marry me, she said, hell yeah.
She waited for that question a long time. Pop the juice.
Yes. So very happy for them. So you know the paparazzi will be looking out for the wedding.
Mm-hmm. And that's another wedding.
Another soca couple.
There you go. That'd be nice.
Yeah. Not.
Mm-hmm. So that'd be cool.
That'd be exciting.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking about the idea. This is kind of way off key, but hopefully it'll remain. For years and years, male calypsonians and the early soca artists in the 70s and the early 80s are all confirmed bachelors. And they were just doing things that bachelors do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But our modern generation is actually getting married, right? And staying within the business, right?
Yeah.
And I find that's pretty cool. I ain't gonna lie. The whole industry is evolving, and now there's families. Of course, the Viking and the Viking, we know that pairing.
Yeah.
Right, but now you have Patrice and Ricardo Drew, and I'm sure there'll be others to come. Right? It's just that these couples are now serious and bonded, and there's no flim flam. And of course, the other thing is, right now, aside from Michelle and Kes, the top artists are all females, right? And there's a kind of battle. There's a kind of battle in terms of popularity. At the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned that there were a lot of Trinidad writers, women writers, novelists who are kind of making it big out there. And I think that soca might now become a female industry. I know the mass players are majority female. What if now all the soca singers are majority female?
I ain't mad at that at all.
There you go. There you go.
I am mad at that at all.
It happens, and it happens here. We like it so. We have extra.
Yes, Carnival is woman.
Carnival is
taking over in every sphere.
No comment, because I'm going to get both. But you're correct. I mean, let's not play games about that. It's inevitable sooner or later. As I said, there was a time when it was a kind of misogynistic and macho, and it was bad. But yeah. them days over, and they say nah, and women actually just put on better songs.
Yeah. Like,
for the last 5-6 years, Patrice to me has not a bad song.
And they're looking damn good too.
There you go.
So, you know.
There you go. Nadia's writing hits, as far as I'm concerned. Major
hits and looking amazing, changing. Breaking the internet with bikini shots.
Bikini, oh God. I watch it and I say, Papa, yo. I say, what is going on here?
Nadia.
Yeah. It's a snack. Like she friend.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's a preppy. Right? Yeah, so,
she loved it.
So, as I said, the idea of women taking over in the business of music and in the business of Carnival is something to look forward to. We don't know. It may be. The idea of Carnival not being a destination event that could be on a boat, could be on land, it could be in another locale, but it's still dominated by Trinidadian participation, Trinidad promoters, yeah. Trinidad DJs. So we're now a global, we're literally taking it anywhere in the world. We could go to Alaska and have Carnival, because Trinidadians will follow them. As well as
people. Carnival in Ibiza kind of thing, so.
Well, hey, I think they had once a year, somebody had a soca in Ibiza, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I think the future looks bright. Post-pandemic, there's potential in all the areas in terms of Trinidad music, even steel pan, as we discovered. And we hope that something happens in terms of what the young panists are doing. Of course, we can't forget the legends are still among us. As I said, at 91, Lord Nelson is still there. And at less than 50, Marshall is still there with a 40-year career, which is impressive. He has a new biography. I hope that more and more people get their message out and put it up. This is a different generation, so they may make a documentary, right, of their life, part one and a part two and a part three.
Please go and get the King of Soca. It is available. Please go get it. It's a keeper. It's a keepsake.
There you go. And Laura Doris wrote the foreword. She's not saying it, but I'm going to say it again.
Yes, I wrote the foreword, and I am very thankful to Lady for...
Her name is in the Library of Congress.
inviting me to write the foreword to this book. I mean, it has been a real journey for Lady, and I've been part of her journey, helping her with her thesis, and the thesis formed the basis for this book. So I'm very pleased to have been included in such a... historic piece of work.
There you go. Yeah, so as we go forward, hopefully we'll be able to get Lady on the show. And we want to continue talking about the kind of the business of music and how it is evolving, because the pandemic was a disruptor. But coming up, we're also seeing these little ideas that things are really turning rapidly, as well as things are kind of going back to the old ways. Some people are hard and fast on... Well, forget the hybrid and forget streaming, and we just want to go in person online. And that will also exist. But there are some players out there who are doing the thing. And we look forward to having them on our show, and we look forward to seeing what they do so we could continue talking about the evolved business of music in the Caribbean.
Indeed.
It has been one of those things. So that's about it for this day, this evening, ladies and gentlemen, and I know you will be back, and I know you will be back to hear us. And Laura, I look to see you sooner than rather than later.
Yeah, man.
That's an inside joke, right? But but I hope to see you sooner rather than later, right? So we gonna talk, right? So anyhow, that's about it. So ladies and gentlemen, I am Nigel Campbell.
I am Laura Dowridge, and you've been listening to Music Matters,
the Caribbean Edition. Bye.
Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to Music Matters, the Caribbean Edition. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Music Matters Caribbean. And if you want to listen to our previous podcasts and keep up with our new material, check out the website podcast.iradio.tt. or listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio Public, and more of your favorite podcast platforms.